Right, we are back. Yes, oh, we're back. I even said so on the screen just now. So much fun. We got a lot to talk about this morning. And I actually saw, I think I saw it on Instagram. I saw our guest now, Alexander Leibner, who I was at varsity with. I saw him like making a speech somewhere and talking about communication skills. Where were you doing this?
It was a speaker showcase, Gareth. Vodacom Dome. So the... I have an agency.
By the way, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Vielen Dank.
All right.
I've got an agency that looks after sort of my speaking work.
Okay.
And once a year, they do a speaker showcase in Johannesburg.
Uh-huh.
They do one in Vegas and one in Singapore.
That was very good.
And this was the Johannesburg one. So they invite a whole bunch of corporates and event planners and people looking to get people to speak at their events. And then you do sort of almost like a demo or like a sample of some of the stuff you talk about.
Yeah, because I think that the stuff that you're talking about, certainly in that clip that I saw, is stuff that we've often spoken about and things that I see you doing in your, you know, digital transformation, how the future is going to shape up, and communication stuff too. So Alex was at Varsity with me, but he's been described by the Sunday Times as a seasoned and terrific communicator. And he talks a lot about like the differences between now and what we might live in the future. I have been obsessed, and I know everybody's talking about it, and it's kind of lame to even bring it up, but like AI is fucking wild. I started telling my parents about it because I saw them over the weekend. And my dad was like, my mom's like, I'm not interested. I'm too old.
You see, she goes,
I'm too old for that,
you
right?
You just don't need to learn anything more.
My dad is like, tell me more. And I think I've got him interested to the point where he sees how it can be used as a business tool and it can do things for him that require otherwise a huge amount of energy and thought and time. And I don't think he wants to waste that time anymore.
Mm.
So he looks at it and he goes, yeah, okay. How much does this thing cost? I'm not what ChatGPT Pro. So it's like 399 Rand a month or whatever. And he's like, I'm in. Which is interesting because people over 70 are mostly not interested in new stuff.
Yeah.
So what got you interested in this? Because, I mean, I used to remember us just talking shit and you taught me a bit of German. And in fact, we'll get to this just now, but we're going to have some fun. Remember that Backpfeifengeschichte that I told you about last time? Well, Alex was listening to the show and he sent me a list of other German words that we will learn later on.
Lovely.
That you can't.
Very descriptive.
Of course, German is. There are words in German that you cannot
translate.
Like Schadenfreude, right?
Yeah, Zeitgeist. Everyone uses Zeitgeist.
I used Zeitgeist the other day. Yeah. Of course, people who don't speak German go Zeitgeist, but Zeitgeist, the time feeling. Do you know those people who just have an idea of, like, for example, what's happening in America now? Very different feeling to what it was 4 or 5 months ago, right?
Yeah.
And that Zeitgeist, if you don't know what that is, there's no other word. There's nothing in English. There's nothing in any other language. Got to use the German. So, okay, let's go back to this digital stuff and the future.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's interesting. I think what makes the topic relevant to me is that I also enjoy history. And I think history is so critical understanding where we're going, because often like a lot of people say, it doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes. So you often look at something and go, oh, this seems very familiar. Well, why does it seem familiar?
People use this term through the lens of whatever. But if you don't have a lens of history, everything's sort of grainy and you can't pick up patterns and it doesn't make sense. And everything is just this big stumbling block everywhere. If you've got the lens of history, things are a lot clearer. You can go, okay, well, human behavior doesn't really change. Human nature doesn't really change. But the things that humans do, you can almost predict the pattern if you've got a historical lens to look through, because you could see what people have done before when new things come along. And there isn't anything new under the sun, actually. Someone somewhere has tried some of the things that you're about to try, and you can learn from them. So I agree with you, and it's also a subject that you and I love is history. So explain what kind of stuff you're interested in now.
So if you look, so I've been in media for 25 years. So I started around 2000 when I left school. I think we met just before that.
Yeah.
In your 702 days.
Oh.
And having been in that industry for so long, we've seen that industry evolve. I mean, remember the first Idols, there was no social media.
No.
Like if you wanted to watch it, you'd either have to read the U magazine or you had to
tune in on a certain day at a certain time. mean, you tell people.
That's so true. I've forgotten about that.
You tell people under the age of 35 now that there was scheduled television.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you had to wait a week for your favorite show to come back on. And they go, bullshit.
And indeed, you'd have to buy the U magazine so that you could find out all the behind the scenes stuff and the gossip stuff. There was no way of knowing. Yeah.
You couldn't speak to the people themselves. Now you can do that online.
Oh, my gosh.
And then, you know, fast forward even further, and then sort of end of the 2000s, we saw social media come in. And then I spent about a good 12 years working at a Pan-African business news media company. And we started seeing how things were evolving, how print was starting to fade, how television was starting to take strain. You had this growth of social media. And I think it's through the lens of seeing your own industry almost go through an evolution or an extinction or whatever it is, that also brought about this business for you.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think some people see the signs and see the flags and go, I'm going to get ahead and start embracing where things are going and maybe even defining where it's going. Because I think there's the future and then there's your future. Because a lot of people go, oh, I'm just a victim to whatever's going to happen. Like whatever comes along, I'm just going to have to just take it, right?
How do we measure? This comes up all the time on Twitter because people hate talking about it. But like IQ is pattern seeking. What we were just talking about, history, is also looking for those patterns. And if people can't find the patterns, then everything in life is a big surprise. Everything in life is like unpredictable and bizarre.
Yeah.
Right? It's like you never learn a thing. You just constantly, nothing
I know people
sense.
Like that.
Yeah, of course. Very stupid people.
And eventually, you either make a decision to kind of go that route, or as I say, you just become part of the weave of history where things just sort of fall apart around you. So eventually, then I exited end of 2019, and then decided to kind of embrace it. On the one hand, go into a digital media business myself and set that up, and on the other hand, also start getting involved in future think tanks around the world and tap into kind of what was happening, and then also ended up doing a lot of talks for companies. Yeah. I mean, it was the worst. It was the best and the worst possible of times because COVID had just happened, had just started the lockdown, and the last thing people wanted to hear about was the future because
they were like, terrible.
This is more than just trying to survive.
This is more than enough for us. Thank you very much. We don't need to hear about more killer ants or whatever else were coming along.
Yeah. What was your ant film?
Oh, my God. We had such a thing about ants last week. Yeah. Mara, what?
Marabunta.
Marabunta. Killer ants.
So what
do you think the media landscape of the future looks like? Because also media in many ways, you could say that the kinds of stuff, and I mean, there's still old people who refer to the TV news as the truth, right? And they don't know any better. And you could put Marabunta into the TV news and they'd believe it, right? Because that's the only source they've ever known and trusted. But media is sort of, and journalists in particular have done themselves an enormous disservice because they've lost such a lot of credibility. And for people who don't know that the internet exists, I feel sorry for them. I don't know who they are, but there are people like that. They will continue to believe whatever you throw at them. But the rest of us are super skeptical about everything.
Yeah. No, and I mean, you were talking about AI and obviously what role that plays in sort of manufacturing information. And then I suppose there's a whole other conversation about having a chat about the science of outrage and how that gets manufactured.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
increased or decreased.
Those are the algorithms that social media companies have used.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a pragmatic part to it, which I think is the entire discussion around the business model. I find that most major media companies have got outdated business models that are based on, you know, when they first started 30 or 40 years ago, where having a few thousand people in a building sitting at desks.
Yeah.
Was viable because they were making enough money on advertising. But the advertising revenue has now completely been depleted. It's been fractioned, it's fragmented.
Yeah.
And it's not what it used to be. So you can't run an operation of that size based on an old business model. So the business model has to evolve. And that's why I'm always fascinated by things like The Real Network, what Ali Cog is doing at BizNews, sort of these business models that say, if we had to do it again now, if we had to start it all over again now, how would we do it? How could you do it now with the internet, with being remote working, with using AI, with using all these things? You suddenly don't need to have 5,000 people sitting in a building somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
or you can't afford it.
No, it's because you can't pay for it. Yeah.
And look at how, you know, companies like MultiChoice are suffering They I think they lost 400,000 subscribers in the last year.
It was a significant chunk.
Huge.
Yeah.
And I mean, this used to be a, they could print money in the old days. And I think the same is true for the SABC. It's a challenge for publishing companies in particular.
Mm. Well, we just see News 24 make the decision to remove four newspapers in print and go fully digital. So some might say, you know, is it a decision too late?
Oh.
Should it not have happened a long time
ago? All I was thinking is, what are people who have birds going to use at the bottom of the cage?
Exactly.
For the bird shit. I mean,
without newspaper,
that's the only thing I thought. I was like, I didn't care about the fact that these news sources, which were outdated, were going to be disappearing. I was like, what are people going to use when they have to clean up, like, dog turds?
Yeah, some traditionalists will still use newspaper and window lean to clean windows.
Right.
And also, it made me think, you know, remember how we had to save the trees by not printing things? Have we saved the trees?
No, we've got more trees now than we had 10 years ago and 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Reforestation is an actual thing.
But looking at the newspaper business, I think there's this interesting phenomenon now where you're seeing the increasing growth of hyper-localized news.
Yeah.
So newspapers that are focused on small areas or on, you know, a city or on a particular thematic, those are doing exceptionally well. Those are the ones where you're seeing this incredible growth.
Same thing happened in the magazine business.
Yes.
You know, you've got a fly fishing magazine that is absolutely doing its, they're doing so well. And they only advertise and sell fly fishing stuff. And it's for a very small but very dedicated community. And they can charge a lot for the magazine. But your big general ones have all failed.
Because you can get that information anyway.
Yeah.
And it also depends on the advertisers. I mean, you know the game. I mean, you can sit here as well and have as many discussions around digital and how measurable it is and all those things. Yet if the agencies who are buying that advertising or the clients themselves are not into it, you know, they'll still revert back to radio, television, print. And that at the end of the day determines if something grows or if, you know, revenue comes or doesn't come. And that's also a bit of an evolution. Like, is that industry prepared to change that feeds these media platforms? Mm. Because they'd essentially be evolving themselves out of business. Right. The media planner, the strategist, the whole lot.
Yeah, and some of those people, frankly, deserve to be out of business. Because I've been fighting with them
for years. You know I'm one of them, right?
Yeah, but I've been fighting with them for years. So Slippery Pickle says, I know someone who thinks that the cloud server is literally stored in the sky.
Oh, dear.
Shout out to Adrian Shaw.
It's kind of admirable.
Adrian, that's embarrassing for you. But
so if it rains, is that when the cloud server
that's when all data. Your data comes down. Yeah.
Catch your data.
Okay, so language. Let's get into these German words because I can tell the audience is keen on those. So, I mean, you grew up speaking German.
Yeah, I come from a
family.
German family, yeah, right. That's right. Yeah.
So when you hear these words, you understand them straight away, but let's go through a few of them.
Right.
Yeah, okay. You got them. Let's go. Let's
I'll all, pull up some here. Okay,
yeah, so it's time for you to learn some Germans this morning.
I sent you a couple of words. The one was, now I'm going to have to recalibrate
your pronunciation
here.
Has to be good.
Sommerferien Ewigkeitsgefühl.
Oof.
It's like 9 syllables-ish.
So that, do you want to give you
the actual literal translation?
So it's summer holiday. Summer
Some
holiday
it's a feeling,
for everlasting feeling.
Oh wow!
Wow, that would be a really that's like almost permanent happiness.
If you had to, if you had to dumb it down, it would be it's a vibe.
Yeah.
So say it again now. Now that we know.
Sommerferien Ewigkeitsgefühl. So Ewigkeit is forever, and Gefühl is obviously feeling, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Then there's another one called Gaststätten. Gaststätten neuer Eröffnungsuntergangsgewissheit.
It's like there was a bit of a Gesundheit in there.
What is that?
Looking for patterns.
Okay, direct translation.
So that is confidence that a newly opened restaurant is doomed to fail.
That's hilarious.
That's
I love
so
it.
So great. You see, everybody should know that because who hasn't seen that before?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you walk into the place.
You're going like, this place is not going to last.
Oh, shame. They've,
so you
they've
need
done
to be
this...
able to say that.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the other one is Kraftfahrzeug, Innenausstattung, Neugeruchsgenuss.
Oh my God. That's a disease caused by, I don't know.
By Kraftfahrzeug. Tell me. It's the new car smell.
Oh, so that's a long word to describe new car smell. In this case, I think English wins.
So if you ever buy a Mercedes-Benz or BMW. Right,
oh, there we've got them right now.
Gestatten.
No wonder you were battling to read them.
Hoffnung, Sonntagsgewissheit.
Oh, confidence at a new year.
That's the restaurant one. Okay.
Newcastle.
Wow.
Kraft, which is a car, right? Or not?
No, Fahrzeug.
Kraftfahrzeug, yeah, that's Fahrzeug, motor vehicle, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Innenausstattung, Neuerung. You know, it's funny. I actually found these words I found these words in a book at a doctor's room.
Oh, wow.
It's like a collection of like really contrived German words.
How amazing. I mean, they do a thing that also is meant to happen in Afrikaans, where they just take a whole lot of words and you can compound them as much as you want.
Yeah.
And in German, you actually can do that. And it's a word.
Mm. I don't know if you could do it in English. I don't know if anyone's really trying to.
It's possible. It doesn't make sense.
You end up having hyphens and it ends up being broken up.
But I love Scheiße, yeah. Thank you, Lisa.
There we go.
Scheiße. And I like the way she's using the double S there.
Very good. That's quite advanced. That is
very
quite
good, Lisa. Very nice.
I still like the.
You've got your first.
But it's always a Schmidt Frank. I think there must
Schmidt
be a bit of.
Schmidt Frank, yeah, probably.
Schmidt Frank.
So.
There's my cat flap, which is called the Grosje Katzenklapper.
Your what? Your what?
My cat flap. A flap for my cats.
Oh, the door thing. God, I was completely on another page.
And that's written there, Grosje Katzenklapper.
Grosje, a big cat Grosje, clap.
Yeah. Flap.
Flap.
Katzenklapper. I love the way that the. You can kind of, even if you're not German, you can sort of read, like Leanne did, something into German. And when I was in Berlin last, I read everything, right? So I'll read menus and street signs and pamphlets and whatever the hell else there, even if I don't understand it. And before you know it, and I'm not particularly gifted in languages, but I pick it up really quickly. And by the end of like a 3 or 4 day trip, I'm basically speaking German.
Yeah.
Like my pronunciation's starting to come right because I say it over and over in my head and I read everything. Mm. And eventually you immerse yourself to the degree that you can.
Well, if you understand Afrikaans, I think you probably have a slightly easier way
they say English, which comes from Anglish, which is from the Anglo-Saxons. And the Angles came from Schleswig-Holstein, effectively. And the Saxons came from Sachsen in Germany, right? So technically,
it's more English than it is Afrikaans.
Should be very Germanic and easy to understand, and vice versa with English and German. It isn't. It isn't. And of course, there's the Dutch influence in Afrikaans, which makes it a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are places in South Africa where there are huge German communities.
Yeah, I don't know if they're as big as they used to be. I know around 94, when there were a lot of German companies coming back to South Africa, you know, like Lufthansa and Siemens, and all, they used to send big management teams here to obviously set up the companies. But as the countries evolved, they've handed over more and more of that responsibility over to local management teams. There's obviously been upskilling. There's been integrating people into these businesses. So now you'll find like, you know, Volkswagen Gruppe and all these places have got more South Africans there. There might be one or two Germans.
We still had Deutsche Schule.
Yes, they're still there.
All over, right?
But they've also diversified. They're now an international school. So they've kind of embraced more non-German speaking people wanting to speak German. But I do believe that we have one of the biggest embassies outside of Germany here in Pretoria.
Yeah.
So South Africa seems to still be a very strategic part of Germany's sort of foreign affairs. I think maybe with Namibia, there's maybe a little bit of a tie in there. But yeah, there is still bits of it, but I don't think it's as big as it was once.
Where are the Leibniz from in Germany originally?
It's an interesting one. I started following it, and initially there's some talk that it came from sort of more Eastern Europe. It moved through into so my dad was born in a part of Germany which now belongs to Poland, which was Poland before.
Where? What?
It was called, well, it's now a city called just outside of Breslau. It's now called Wrocław. So he was born.
I had that once. I saw a guy for it.
he was born as World War II broke out, sort of round about that time.
Not a great time to be born in that part of the world.
No, and then obviously when the Russians pushed back, he then became a refugee into West Germany.
Sure.
He had been pushed around.
And then ended up on the other side of the Berlin Wall, well, what was going to become the Berlin Wall, East Germany.
Yeah.
And then had to flee overnight and escape.
Oh, what a story.
He's got an incredible story. Actually, the whole family that then obviously had to live through that East German time.
Had relatives who were in East Berlin?
Yes, I actually had an aunt, and that's also an amazing story.
How is your aunt Angela Merkel?
But I had an aunt who had an interesting story, because there was always this talk that there wasn't, the East German government didn't have time to build walls, and like there was better things for them to do. And my aunt went for a dinner, which was then West Germany, one night, and it was running late, and the friend said, well, listen, why don't you sleep over and you can drive back tomorrow? And they said, no, we'd rather go back today and whatever. And they drove back, and that night the wall was built.
Oh my God.
And they were stuck on the other side. They were stuck in East Germany.
Oh, they could have
yeah, wow, been in West Germany.
Totally
yeah.
different life, huh?
And then we used to visit them every year. We used to pass through the checkpoints, and they'd I'd go, I was still in a pram.
Yeah,
But we'd go every year and we'd visit them, and then they'd obviously always search your stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Literature, Western literature, games.
There was probably there's files in some dank basement somewhere with you photographed as a child and the Gestapo reporting that you weren't an insurgent.
Well, yeah. we had an uncle who was spied upon by the Stasi.
Yeah.
And there's a file. We got the entire file released after they were made available. And it's, I don't know if you ever know, there was a movie called Das Leben der Anderen, The Life of Others.
Yes.
It's a German movie about this time where people were spied on.
Well, they say that fully one third of the country were busy telling on the other two thirds of the country almost all the time. I went to the most fascinating place when I last was in Berlin, and they took us on a tour of one of those camps that they put spies into, like West German spies or anyone who they thought was a, you know, counter-revolutionary back in the East German days. And I mean, the conditions were just appalling. They had like very low ceilings and it kept people in these cells on purpose. It was a kind of psychological torture. And I just thought, well, this was happening not that long ago. It all only ended in 89.
Sure.
Yeah. You know,
it's bizarre.
And that's why I think you also still see such a divide between East and West Germany now, because you find that people from the East are still very different to people from the west of Germany. So, and I think that's also why you're maybe also seeing a lot of what's happening now in the politics and the elections, how people are voting and how people are making decisions.
Can you help me just in short, and maybe the people who are listening and watching as well? I don't understand German politics at all. It's extremely complicated. They've been in coalition governments pretty much since the war. I don't know which parties, which everyone's telling me that this AfD is like a, they're extreme right-wingers, but when I look at what they're actually saying, I don't think they're that right-wing. Germans are obviously very prickly about right-wing for very justifiable historical reasons, right? But what do you make of what's going on there?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Germany's also trying to understand its position in the world.
Hmm.
You know, the Germans are known to be very rigorous in their decision-making, but in that entire process, they're becoming very difficult in trying to work in a modern world.
Well, also, don't you think that it's partly because the EU has complicated things, and Germany is like the flag bearer for the EU.
Well, them in France, right?
And they're also paying for most of it.
Yes,
right.
And totally, yeah. And I mean, they're also having to live in a world now where, you know, most of these European countries are not used to this massive diversity. I mean, for us, it's normal. We know that we have different religions, different races, different cultures, and we kind of put that all together in a pot and call that South African. Where in these countries like Sweden or whatever, like you've got a typical Swedish-looking person or a typically looking Italian person.
Yeah.
Now, when you start mixing that up on top of having to now find your place in the world, being, you know, influenced by China. I mean, the German automotive industry is taking massive strain. They're taking massive strain in terms of digitalization. I mean, digitalization didn't happen. They're still trying to get fiber, never mind, I mean, I think in some cases they're still working off ADSL lines or copper lines. I mean, it's crazy. Like for a country of this,
you would think this magnitude, you'd be so advanced.
Now the train network's taking strain because they haven't invested in that. So, there were a whole bunch of train networks closed down. The train's not on time.
Oh, my God. That must touch a German. please, the Germans without Pünktlichkeit.
Yeah.
No, I so, mean, that must be terrible.
So there's a lot of that kind of stuff happening. And also, like, I mean, a cousin of mine is a director for a supermarket, a regional supermarket group.
Yeah.
And they're taking massive strain as well in terms of people not enough people to employ. So they've got situations where they've literally got entire branches that they don't open for a week or two because there's no one to run it. Nobody wants to do the work. And if you do get someone to do the work, you have to pay them a fortune. And if they don't like the tone of your voice or kind of like how you're managing them, they just walk out and they go to the supermarket across the road and get a job there for twice the price.
And unbelievable. I mean, this is the same problem in some ways that France and the UK are going through. It's like the people that don't want to work, they want more holidays, they want more pay, but they want to do less. And then they complain about immigrants who actually will come and do the work.
Mm.
And without the immigrants, no one would be doing anything and everything would just start to lose its, you know, ability to work, like the train networks and everything else. It needs maintenance, needs people actually making it happen. And, oh, no, I don't want to do that. That's a dirty job.
Mm. And it's a very old country. I mean, majority of the country is well into its 60s, 70s, 80s.
Right.
And that's why
young people don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah, and obviously those people are now making decisions for the youth because obviously they're still a majority, so they're still making those decisions.
It's like living in your grandparents' house.
Yeah, and it just doesn't work. And I think that's where there's this big frustration. So I think a lot of the votes that are coming through for a lot of the more extreme parties that have more extreme views is almost a little bit of a protest vote. I think people are saying, you know, like, well, if you're not going to listen to me, then I'm just going to, you know, give it to you and you can deal with it. So it is a bit of a messy situation. I know they've got a new election now. I think it's this week or end of this month. So we'll see how it goes. But I mean, it's important for Europe.
It's apposite that we were talking about this, which I think is probably right. But do you do German stuff in your family, like around Christmas?
Traditional holidays.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Do you still do German things?
Like, totally.
Oktoberfest and that kind of stuff.
Well, I've been to the Oktoberfest twice, once as a baby and then once when I was older.
Oh, good that you went as a baby.
In Munich.
Yeah. You guys are a kid and you like, you know, wear a hat. In Munich, yeah, in München. And it's if you ever do anything, like this is something to do. It sounds ridiculous because you go, oh, I've been to a beer fest, I don't know, somewhere in Pretoria or whatever. Mm. Like, what's the difference?
No, it's not the same.
This is on a different level. 11 million people.
Jesus.
It is the biggest, and it is an absolute vibe. Even if you don't drink beer,
yeah,
it's one of the places you will drink beer because the beer is very good.
Yeah,
it's only from Munich, Munich breweries.
Yeah,
if you ever see a series called Oktoberfest Blood and Beer, there was a series made about the history of the Oktoberfest. It's brilliantly produced. It's German. They did a translation into English about where it came from and how this guy came up with this concept. And there's obviously, you know, murder and money and pillaging, and I mean it's
a story,
quite a rough history, but it's an incredible story how this guy turned this thing into the biggest festival in the world. And it's an absolute vibe. I know somebody from Cape Town, he books a table every single year and he goes every single year with a bunch of friends and they have an absolute
blast. They dress up and everything.
Mm, totally. Gareth, if you don't dress up, you might as well not go.
So what, you have to do the lederhosen,
the dirndl for the ladies, the Tiroler Hut, yeah. Whatever you can got. But I mean, listen, there's stores all over Munich.
Wow.
Some of them are obviously very expensive. Some of them are way more reasonable. And it's amazing how you've got this many people in one place, in these massive halls, drinking beer and eating Brezel and Weisswurst and whatever. Mm,
nice.
And you don't really have many incidences. Like there's not, you know.
No. People mostly behave.
Whatever, but,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, I think people think Germans are terribly, terribly serious people, but they actually just, party the tits off. All the Germans I've met in South Africa who are actually German are hilarious and lots of fun.
But
so what else do you do?
Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
So we celebrate Christmas Eve, Christmas same. Day. There's obviously the part of Germany where my family is now based in Bavaria is very Catholic.
Mm.
So a lot of the Catholic holidays align with a lot of the German traditions.
Mm.
But also like the food, you know, you go and track down certain German foods.
You not have any, like, I'm thinking about the Dutch and I'm not comparing in any way, but I know the Europeans in general have like a weird folklore creature that they celebrate on a certain day of the year. Have you got anything like that?
Well, you've got creature.
Like the Dutch have got this absolutely scary thing that they expose children to every year. And it's like...
Is that not around Nicholas? Like, I know in Germany it's Nicholas. You've got Nicholas in December. Like,
yeah,
it's Saint Nicholas. And then he comes with this character called the Grampus.
Yes, that's it. I was just wondering if you had something similar.
It's basically like a thing. It looks almost like a bison Taurus type thing. I mean, it's real. People dress up in these small
towns.
It's terrifying.
And they obviously, if you're a good kid, the Nicholas comes, Saint Nicholas, and he brings
the
you.
Grampus
otherwise,
comes.
The Grampus comes with his like his rod and his. He's got big cowbells, and they do it in Switzerland as well, and in Austria as well.
Sure.
And yeah, I mean, listen, as a kid, you're terrified. I mean, you're just like, let me just keep it together for the year, and I don't have to encounter the.
No, the only thing I can say for sure is a big problem in my childhood is that I was exposed very early to Struwwelpeter.
Struwwelpeter, yeah.
You know Struwwelpeter, yeah. Right? Yeah. So Struwwelpeter is this kid.
Is that like Sir Peter?
No, he was a mess. He's like Scruffy Peter.
Okay.
And he had long fingernails, never cut his fingernails. He never washed his hair, so he had greasy, dirty hair. And one day his hair catches on fire and he tries to put it out, but he's got long nails, so he scratches his face off and he dies. And this is a children's story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the brother's grim, normal. You know? Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah, perfectly normal. That's great. It's lovely.
Yeah,
that's the kind of shit you grew up with, and you wonder how you end up being normal.
Yeah, well, Max and Moritz.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh. Then there was a very popular kids' TV show called Pumuckl, which was a little I wouldn't call him a Kampfzwerg, but he was like a little dwarf.
A Kampfzwerg, which we learned the other day, right? A very angry, militant war dwarf.
Yeah, who would sort of disappear and reappear.
Kampfzwerg, there it is. Combat dwarf.
Kampfzwerg.
Person who always has aggression problems, like always.
All right, so this what was the show?
Pumuckl. So it was like a little disappearing... I don't know how to call him, like a little man who would like live in like a carpenter's house, yeah. And he'd appear and disappear, and the carpenter and him built up this relationship, and he'd always cause trouble, and the carpenter would have to sort it out. It's very popular for many, many years on German television.
Wow.
I was just thinking of another tradition that you're talking about. So when I went to my cousin's wedding in Bavaria, they have a very strange way of doing the wedding day, but you wake up at like 3 a.m.
Oh.
And they fill up balloons with welding helium.
Oh, yes.
So they have these, they put these
welding helium.
Yeah, no, well, it's helium.
Just helium. Yeah. Yeah.
But they get from the welder provider.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
they put up these poles and then they put the balloons on them. And then you get like a really long rod with a rag that's lit.
Oh, no,
and
you're talking about hydrogen.
Oh, sorry, hydrogen, yeah.
You make a big explosion.
Yeah, and then then you light these things at 3 a.m. in these small towns in like the Bavarian Alps.
Makes a huge big ball of fire.
And it goes, boom.
Yeah.
And they do it like 3 or 4 times. And let me tell you, that whole town is awake. It sounds like it's...
But then they go, another wedding.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you get the bride and groom out of the house. And then basically you've set up a bit of a breakfast in the barn with Weisswurst, Jägermeister, and beer.
Oh.
At 3:30 in the morning.
Oh, my God. So that's how you're starting your day.
Well, Bettina Eva Krenbauer says, Pumuckl was so cute and funny. She doesn't have that accent. I just gave it to her anyway.
But it sounded good.
Yeah, I think I like
that. Legit, yeah.
All right, there's some other things I want us to talk about because we actually have quite a lot on the agenda this morning, and Leanna brought some stuff that she wants to show us as well. So apparently this is the 10 worst countries to visit for food, and the reason I bring this up now is because I'm not really so sure that German cuisine is top drawer.
You know, I love it.
I don't know. I disagree.
I love it.
Some of them are just leverwurst. It's disgusting.
Leverwurst.
Oh, it's disgusting. It's liver sausage.
Yeah. Well, I think you're thinking of a Blutwurst.
Blutwurst, which also is disgusting. Weisswurst, disgusting.
No, Weisswurst is great.
No,
come on, Gareth.
I had
schnitzel.
And obviously, in places like Berlin, you get now everything's curry because there's a huge immigrant population, and they've kind of. They provide the better food. So Germans are now eating that stuff. So now you currywurst.
Well, you get the döner, you know, the shawarma, which is
shawarma.
And funny enough, the Turkish döner, which has become super popular in Germany, actually doesn't exist in that form in Turkey. So they
become German.
They Germanized it
for
Germany. And it's fantastic. I mean, the döner is amazing. Schnitzel, I can't imagine you don't like schnitzel. Käsespätzle?
No.
Those little noodles with the Swiss cheese on top. Oh, gosh.
I'm okay with German. German food is not one of my favorite things. I it's not that I'm a foodie anyway. You shouldn't take my advice. But
it's not something I could eat every day, whereas I could eat Italian every day, or I could eat
absolutely
Spanish food every day or Mexican.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But look, okay, a lot of these traditional foods have also come from places where people used to work the farms every day. So they are so calorie and
you need such a hefty meal after that. You need to, you
know, no. So plow the fields. All those wursts, it's just enough.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Go on. What's the worst?
This is a travel journalist who's written this article recently. We often see these, you know, worst countries to visit for food. And she starts with Iceland. And there we've got a good plate of Icelandic food.
And they love that stinky fish that they pickle and all that kind of
thing. Yes, they do. They fermented shark, pickled herring, dried fish. The challenges are obviously... That's in the tin. Limited fresh produce, obviously, due to the climate. So you don't get many fruits and veggies. Very expensive as well. So acquired tastes that you would find there are dishes like hakal, which is the fermented shark, and shred, I think, sheep's head, can be a little bit off-putting.
Well, that's like amohodu.
We eat sheep's head, yeah. So not too different.
Okay, but still gross.
But apparently Reykjavik has a lot of like modern restaurants and international cuisine. The second one they mention is Mongolia. I'm sorry, but that just looks...
Well, that's
you
like
can put it in a
steak tartar, yeah.
So Mongolia, predominantly meat-based.
Probably horse.
Yes, mutton, horse meat, dairy products. Again, harsh climate, so limited vegetables. I mean, there you've got a few spring onions and a leaf.
Yeah, like a leaf that's probably off a tree that's indigestible.
Vegetarians would not survive there.
Well, Mongolia is not... I mean, you have yourself to blame if you're going to Mongolia for a culinary tour. You can't even spell Ulaanbaatar. Let's pretend that you're going to go there and try, you know, horse for the first time, and it's going to be great.
Greenland's plate is not looking green either.
That's all for now.
That's just biltong.
Is it
and some leaves again. And it's on a punnet? No wonder Greenland, you know, really. I don't know why Trump wants it.
We're going to open a Burger King or something there, maybe.
Well, maybe it's a good thing. I'd rather go to a Burger King than whatever that is on that plate. What is that?
It's probably whale or seal.
Oh.
Other game meats as well. They're into their game. And then a lot of preserved food, obviously being an Arctic country. Again, fruits and vegetables, not a big thing.
Mm.
You think about how lucky we are to walk down in our grocery store aisles and they're filled with colorful fruits and veggies.
Okay.
Don't take it for granted. Okay, the fourth one is Nauru, which is a tiny island.
Nauru.
Oh, kind of in between Australia and Indonesia.
South Pacific.
In the micro Indonesia. That, I don't know, it looks like
cauliflower
to me, which isn't, you know, offensive.
But how did it get there? Is this also one of those things that...
It's in the middle of the sea.
They just brought cauliflower along and were like, this is it.
So apparently the challenge really there is not so much with the type of food, but the health concerns. Wow. They've got a lot of imported processed foods, which has led to a lack of traditional healthy options. People can get quite ill.
Too fat.
So apparently the local markets, it kind of reminds me a little bit of being in the Seychelles.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're quite far away from everything. You've got limited stuff on that island. So we, for instance, used to get self-catering in the Seychelles.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to the spa there, and there are two types of spices, and that's it.
Right.
You have to go to the market for everything. Rows and rows of fish, rows and rows of fresh herbs and that sort of thing.
Well, there are a lot of Europeans who like that, the market. You know,
fresh, at least you know it's, you know.
Yeah.
And also they have people who specialize in certain things. You've got like the
potato
fruit and veg
guy.
Woman or and then you've got the guy who does only venison and he's got like a little stall and All right, so far, look, Nauru not so bad, the others I'm not interested in. Mm. Go on.
Kazakhstan?
Oh god. Can we see the picture for Kazakhstan? What is
that's Warbleton.
No, look at that at the back. It's like almost like a sort of, you know how the Spanish always have their
chorizo.
No, but they always hang up like a big ham.
Oh, that jambon.
Jambon.
I always have that hanging up, and this looks like it's been dried out. And
so very meat heavy, featuring dishes like besh barmak,
which is what
boiled meat with sauce with noodles.
God.
And then kazi, which is horse meat sausage. So that's what you're looking at there. Kazi. Well, they're looking at it. That looks like they've stuffed a whole horse into an intestine because it's not very minced up.
No. Okay, is next.
Ugh. Gross. Okay, Kazakhstan. Next one, Madagascar.
Wait, hang on. I'm going to sing the song for Kazakhstan, greatest country in the world. All other country run by little girls. Right?
That's it.
I met some Kazakhstan journalists in December.
Really?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
I was in Abu Dhabi, yeah? And they were sitting at the table next to me, and obviously I was meeting people around the table, and I was quite amazed because this group was, they were quite Korean looking.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Kazakhstan, it was more sort of Eastern European, whatever, but it was actually very more Asian sort of influenced.
Kazakhstan's
rather than
bang in the middle.
Yeah.
Middle and Far East, and there's Kazakhstan. And it's also got that Siberian sort of influence from northern Russia.
Yeah.
It's an amazing place.
Very interesting. And
lots of nuclear experiments conducted there too during the 70s by Russian government.
And they speak, it was a Kazakh and Russian. I think that's the main two languages. Yeah.
And did they impress you?
It was quite a limited conversation because I think their English, not main language.
Yeah. Not main language.
They were very sweet and I think they also hadn't sort of been much out of that sort of area. I mean, they do a lot of stuff in the Middle East and travel around, but they were quite amazed to meet somebody from Africa, let alone somebody who looks more German than African, in whatever stretch of the imagination. Yeah. So it was quite
I wouldn't mind going to some of those other stans, like Uzbekistan and Tajikistan and Turkmenistan, because there are places there that were on the old Silk Road.
Yeah.
To the east during the sort of ancient right through to the medieval and beyond. There are places that are very, very ancient. Samarkand. I mean, these are like almost magical, mystical places from history, which have largely been unchanged for hundreds, if not thousands of years. You've got like mosques that were built, 200 or 300 years after Muhammad, and they still look exactly the same. So there are things like that that are quite interesting.
Well, it's like that whole conversation around Syria when they had that horrible war and they were destroying all these ancient ruins.
Syria's still there. Right? It's still a disaster.
You know, to see a lot of this historic stuff,
I hate that. Oh, man, makes me so upset. Because it belongs to all of humanity. You know?
Absolutely.
And you got two factions of idiots complaining and arguing with each other in some country, and then stuff gets destroyed. Like, I was so nervous when that Muslim Brotherhood thing was going on in Egypt. I was like, please, stay away from the museums.
Don't touch the pyramid.
Keep your shit outside. Like, don't go in there. Because they were right on Tahrir Square, which is right next to the Egyptian Museum. And I was, oh, my God. Anyway, luckily, I think they managed to keep most of it safe. Let's get back to food. Because people want to know about revolting food. Just in case you're feeling hungry this morning, this is going to put you off so you could be nice and thin. Let's go.
So we've got Madagascar next. I think it's a little bit unfair.
Why? Yeah, because they've got some good stuff. Vanilla, right?
Yeah. And also, if you think about...
That's like horse shit.
They've really been unfair. This journalist has been unfair, and she's used a very bad photograph.
What is that?
Look, whatever it is, those other two people sitting at the table have polished theirs off.
Yeah.
haven't even put their knife and fork together. They have no fucking manners.
Because they're going to have more. That's why it's so good.
Oh, they're going back for more. All right, so what is that nonsense we're looking at?
Again, just like...
It's terrible.
Kale and rice.
Yeah, there's very limited resources there. So rice and anything.
Oh.
They don't say what that is, but grass. It looks like...
It's like, you know when you mow your lawn? You know the shit that you get out of a lawnmower when you mow your lawn? That's what that is on that plate.
Onion and butter.
Food safety is a concern there. Food hygiene, water safety can be an issue.
Oh, my God. Okay, rather don't.
So a lot of rice, just a lot of rice.
Okay, I don't
know.
And like
they
it.
Say if you go to like Antananarivo and bigger cities that you're going to be fine. Next one.
hang on.
Yeah, yeah.
Carl says for you, Alex, German food is fucking horrible, he says. When I was there, I learned that there are endless ways to destroy potatoes. Destroy potatoes.
But you get great stuff in potatoes. You get the mashed potatoes, which everyone likes. Then you've got Bratkartoffeln.
Boiled potato, baby boiled potatoes.
Yeah, with, and you can, and especially if you go more towards the Swiss side, you get a raclette, where you eat the, you know, the raclette cheese.
Terrible.
What?
Terrible raclettes. No. Revolting. They use that stinking cheese.
No, amazing.
Revolting.
And then
raclette.
You get Kartoffelpuffer.
Kartoffelpuffer? What is that?
You know, the Rösti. This was called
Rösti. Rösti.
So, Kartoffelpuffer in German. So, there's some great stuff, yeah.
I do have an Austrian aunt who makes the most excellent Kartoffelsalat.
Kartoffelsalat? Mm. And what about the Klöße? You know, the dumplings?
Mm. You get the potato dumplings. Yeah.
Still, I'm not. You Germans are not winning. Carry on. What's next? I bet you Germany's next.
No, it's not. It's England.
Yes, of course.
Okay, well, that's easy.
Yeah, I mean, the English contribution to cuisine is the potato chip, right?
I don't know.
We call them French fries, so we don't even give them credit for
fish and chips.
So it's just the reputation of it being like bland and heavy.
Yeah.
So your boiled vegetables, your meat pies,
oh, God.
Mushy peas. Ugh. They don't really have much flavor complexity.
Mushy peas has to be the saddest thing.
Love mushy peas.
You like it?
I love cottage pie. I love shepherd's pie. I love bangers and mash.
You're such a peasant.
Fish and chips.
Toast and porridge in the morning.
Porridge. Fish and chips. Sunday roasts. Yorkshire puddings.
Hang on, play that woman for us. One of our listeners sent this in about one of our guests the other day, and this is the kind of person who eats that stuff.
Congratulations on ruining somebody's life because you couldn't keep your legs shut, you dirty fucking whore. Congratulations on ruining somebody's life.
All right, that's a listener of ours.
Yeah, all right.
She was. I think it was Nina Hasty. I don't know who she was talking about there, but very angry, eh?
Yeah, I'm definitely my kind of favorite.
Isn't that the same woman who said something about me once that you played James? Yeah, she said something to me like, "Why don't you crawl back up your mother's minge where you fucking came from?" or something. I was like, "Oh, that's unnecessary."
Hostile.
She's very angry. That's hostile. You'd almost think she was German. All right.
But yet the full English breakfast still kind of makes its way around the world.
Okay,
yeah, exactly.
That is
except for the blood sausage.
I could do without any English food because there isn't such a thing, if you ask me. And all these things that Leanne's described, mushy peas and cottage pie, and I can do without. But an English breakfast, you've got to give some credit to.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
Bacon and eggs. That's I like that. That's very good.
Okay, number 8 on the list is Norway.
Oh, what's coming?
Yeah, there are a lot of pickled fish. Heavy reliance on potatoes there as well. Seems like potatoes will go anywhere, really. What to try? Fresh salmon, reindeer stew, brunost, which is brown cheese. That's apparently worth sampling. And there's some pickled fish there. Pickled fish isn't the end of the world.
It's not great, if you think about Cape.
Pickled fish.
No, I'm okay with.
There's also pickled fish in German. Like they get these Heringbrötchen. You know, you get like pickled herring.
I think it was named after what's his name again?
It'll come to me. In Hamburg, you get sort of pickled herring sandwiches.
Oh no,
and it's just not for me.
I don't know, that
I agree with you is
no, it's very bad.
One step too far.
Konrad Adenauer? Who did they name it after?
Further back.
they named it after Konrad Adenauer.
No.
Who? Friedrich der Große?
No, Friedrich der Große.
Who?
It'll come to me. I'll think of it. Oh. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get there. All right.
Number 9 on the list is Scotland.
Oh yeah, also.
Okay, haggis. We know haggis, which is sheep offal.
Who knows
and then
what
black
that
pudding,
is.
The blood sausage that can be polarizing.
Blood sausage, revolting.
Does the whiskey make up for it?
You
then?
See, but what to try? Scotch to, whiskey, number to, one on the list.
Yeah, you have to pour the whiskey in straight off.
You need a lot of whiskey to eat that.
Yeah.
Shortbread, smoked salmon.
I don't know what I've eaten here, but if I put enough whiskey down my throat, I'll be able to swallow again. Telling you.
Yeah, they've had to adapt. And the last one on the list with probably the most revolting bowl of food I've ever seen
is
Finland. Why it's considered challenging? because they often emphasize simplicity over bold flavors. Mm. So they'll have their staples like rye bread, boiled potatoes, and blood sausage. Ugh, that looks
what is
like
this European thing with blood sausage.
That looks like
thank God I live
bad,
in Africa. You know,
bad meat in milk, which is they say to try is the
Hold on, if you're not looking at this picture, if you're listening instead of watching us on YouTube, this stuff is floating in milk.
It looks like it came from behind a toilet or in a bucket.
Yeah, not very appealing. I can see,
but no, upper decker.
That's an upper decker, that.
Do you think that a lot of these lists correlate directly with the amount of tourism they get?
I think so.
Because if you look at the most exciting or the biggest tourist countries, right? Paris, France,
yeah.
Italy, all linked to great food, right?
Yeah. I know people who travel just to eat. There are people who will go. We spoke about it just the other day when I was in Cape Town about how there's this restaurant in Cape Town that's been voted the best restaurant in the world. And people who are into food will plan their entire holiday around going to that restaurant.
100%. Right? Look, some of these restaurants, you have years-long waiting lists. I used to work for a chef, and he would plan these tours. He'd have some of his tours planned 10 to 15 years in advance because of the bookings of these places.
All right. And then I do want us to get to this before, because Leanne, you know, you bring so much value to the show that if we don't put you to work, it always feels to me like we're not getting the best out of you. Why is it important for redheads to tell their anesthesiologist if they're natural redheads or not?
Have you ever heard of something like this?
Never.
This is totally
really?
News to you as well.
No, news to me.
Okay. But I don't know that many redheads. I choose not to.
Well, you know? Yeah. I mean,
I don't want, who wants to know too many gingers? And I know I'm going to get like comments from.
Well,
do you want to know a lot of gingers?
Well, if you're an anaesthetist, you might.
Is your whole family ginger? Oh, my God. All right, well, this is important information for you.
I also have a lot of family members.
I thought the info was
Irish.
Ginger people don't have souls, so therefore.
No, definitely not.
All right.
So I've actually seen something about this before, something about people going to the dentist.
Yes.
And you have to warn your dentist.
If you're redhead.
If you're a redhead.
And maybe you've colored your hair because you're embarrassed to be a redhead.
Yeah, or maybe you've colored your hair red because you love red hair, which I've done before. But apparently it's quite important. So this dentist and lifestyle content creator, he's released this whole video, and this is why it's all come up for everyone.
Dentist and lifestyle content creator.
Yeah. Sounds like, what a combination. Sounds like not the person you want to go to.
It's like down the road from me, there's holistic dentistry, and I laughed at it. But it's actually so true. So there's so many things. Like if your bite is wrong, it can cause sleep apnea and heart conditions. It is holistic dentistry.
Okay. Anyway. But tell us why redheads need to be careful.
Okay. I'm just scrolling to the good bits.
No, because apparently, I mean, Raven says quite rightly, they are becoming extinct. Remember, we've had this discussion.
So people with red hair require 19% more general anesthesia compared to people with other colors.
No.
Yeah. So apparently you've really got to knock
the
person out.
Knock them the hell out because they just keep coming.
Do they say what the science is behind that? Is it like sort of a...
Yes, they do. They've got, it's all like genetics and... Also leading back to this, and I said this once to a person with red hair and they were highly offended, but it's the truth. And it's just because we as society attach a certain word to this. But apparently redheads are
more Neanderthal.
They're Neanderthal. They come from the Neanderthal.
They're more Neanderthal.
Yes.
Which is not necessarily.
It's not a bad thing. It's just that we've developed this, you Neanderthal thing.
Yeah.
So they've actually got a bit of a different makeup.
Yeah. They're aliens.
So there were years where people were literally going into operations with like 19% too little enough.
And probably thinking, I don't know why, but that still hurts.
I mean, it's hard enough to be a redhead, but now you also have to go and they don't knock you out totally and then you're being operated on and you can feel everything. I mean, how awful. Really, it is such a curse. What
and
a curse.
Also, people waking up too soon towards the end of the, surgery. That's
you're busy being sewn up.
Yeah. They're still busy pulling the pipes out.
That's got to be the worst.
Right, and so, more pain relief as well they need. So if you come out of an operation,
maybe
you'll
they're
need
superhumans.
More.
Maybe they're not soulless demons.
You see?
Maybe, you know, I have a policy. If the redhead comes too close, I have to get holy water And then, and if they come to your house, you must burn them.
No, it's only for that.
Is that not right?
That dwarf who has aggression problems.
Oh, the Kampfzwerg.
Kampfzwerg.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they mentioned that in the article, though.
No, but I'm sure they also need quite a lot of anesthesia.
Yeah.
Kampfzwergs. All right. So tell us what you're up to now. And let people know where they can follow you and all the rest of it.
Well,
media guy. This is what you've got to plug.
That's it, man. This is the punch. Yeah,
self PR.
I own and run the Sandton Times now, which is sort of a digital media platform. People can check it out at Sandton Times. There's also a weekly podcast, which also became a radio show. There's the website, the social media accounts. If you follow that, you'll probably...
Sandton Times,
yeah.
We can find more of your stuff.
You were mentioning community news platforms.
Yeah. You actually sent me a video of your dad when you had that cycling accident.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we had a chat about that, and we put it up on the website, trying to find...
It was a hit and run, yeah.
I remember that.
Those people. I don't think we had much luck, but...
That incident resulted in him bruising his heart.
Mm.
And he had heart problems ever since then, and he passed away two, three months ago.
I remember following that. Yeah,
with heart issues after a big, almost like a transplant.
Yeah. So
okay.
Well, these two knew each other, even if it was a miserable thing like that.
How did you meet? Well,
love introducing people to each other. It's my favorite thing. Yeah. You want to talk about that some more after the show? All right. But very nice to have you here, Alex. And always good to see you. Thank you for teaching us some really, really long German words. I'm sure this will make our lives much more useful. And we will be able to describe things in new and complicated ways. All right. So thank you. And thank you, Leanne. And thank you for joining us this morning. We will be back on Wednesday, 6 a.m. bright and early. Have an awesome start to your week and the last week of January.
Oh Nel, ik ben biseksueel. Maar ja, ik kan daar niks aan doen. Je hebt zo'n mooie kont, zo mollig en zo rond. Oh wat een gat, wat een gevoel is dat.